This hour of Cairo Nights is brought to you by Carrier Heating and Air Conditioning.
Broadcasting live from the Carter Subaru Studios, you're listening to Cairo Nights. Happy Thursday, y'all. I am G. Scott, the Online Trading Academy text line. It is 98973. We'll get right into it. Well, if you wish, was for the controversial safe injection sites to disappear from the county, you're going to need to keep wishing. Washington's highest court has ruled that King County voters won't have the chance to crack down on safe injection sites. The state Supreme Court has just ruled against an initiative that would block public funding of safe injection sites. The court says that because Initiative 27 is outside the scope of local initiative power, it conflicts with the authority of the King County Council. The initiative was going to be on the February ballot. Supporters of the safe injection sites want to open facilities where heroin users can inject while under medical supervision. Backers of the initiative wanted voters to have a say on whether they should be set up in the county. Cities like Bellevue, Kent, and Federal Way, they have already passed ordinances banning them. Councilwoman Jean Colwell says she's pleased with the ruling, but not surprised.
I think their decision is based in our Constitution and in our statute that important public policy decisions involving health should be made by the experts.
So what's the next move for public health?
The Board of Health has already acted. It voted unanimously almost 2 years ago to approve the recommendations of the Seattle King County Opioid and Heroin Addiction Task Force. This was one of the 8 recommendations.
And as for Seattle?
The city of Seattle is embarking on a plan to establish one center for this to occur based on a pilot project. We'll see if it will go forward, and we will see if we do anything more in another area of King County.
And when Councilwoman Jean Colwell was asked when she would like to see a site open, she says,
there are a number of steps that should be taken, but I would like to see one open up as soon as possible because I am convinced that they save lives and help protect the public from needles lying around, used needles that can carry disease.
One of the sponsors of Initiative 27 is Joshua Freed. He's very disappointed.
Certainly we see it's within our right to participate in the electoral process and ban things such as heroin injection sites that enable heroin users to continue to go down a path towards suicide.
He said he wants to help people move away from addiction, not towards it.
We like to make sure that those citizens can get into treatment rather than continue on. But now that opportunity to let our voice be heard and vote on it has been taken away.
Says also that apparently that the decision was very narrow, but it still does damage the initiative process.
I think that they were shrewd in the way that they responded. The state Supreme Court likes to find these little nuanced type of issues that often they just see as administrative type things. If it's to their benefit, like a gun initiative just went forward a little while ago, where procedures weren't followed, where they just said, well, you know, those are just somewhat procedures. On this, they specifically decided to narrow in on the budgetary thing, rather than focus in on the major point of the initiative, which said we want to ban heroin injection sites within King County.
And one of the last things that Freed says that the blame lies with these activist judges.
That's what you get when you have an elected state Supreme Court in the state of Washington. They become political, and this is not just based upon a position of law, but it looks like they're really trying to legislate and support the King County Opioid Task Force. Even in their decision, they specifically quote them in saying that these jail sites are beneficial to citizens and people using drugs, that they can be brought back to life. So they even advocate for them in their response.
You know, I was paying attention to this earlier today, and I thought I would be very transparent on how I have had my how I look at this has changed over time. And when I first heard of it, right, when I first heard of the safe injection sites, a site in which you can go and you can just basically shoot up. Like, that's just a designated spot where...
While supervised,
you get ready to go to this designated spot. When I first heard that, I thought, Are you crazy?
Mm-hmm.
That is the dumbest thing in the world. I could not stand it.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me, I mean, for a while, until I started to get, I mean, some people may not have changed, and I'm not talking about this to try to change anybody's opinion. Until I started to understand a little bit more, and looking back to when I was growing up, back in Chicago, in the projects with when I would go see my grandmother, and the one thing I've learned is this. Those that have a drug addiction, they're going to do drugs no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, no matter when, it does not matter.
Mm-hmm.
However, I feel sometimes it is this, and this is what I was guilty of. I was guilty of saying, if they are on drugs, right? Because just coming up, if they're on drugs, forget about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which that type of thinking is bad, because at the end of the day, someone with a drug problem and a drug addiction should not be thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is an opportunity to be able to help them and be supervised, I'm all for it. Now, it's one of those things where, what do you want more? Do you want the way something looks? Because the sound and the looks of it sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like, my goodness, you just got to have an injection site?
Some people think the word safe injection together is a bit of an oxymoron.
Sure. But if you try to look at it like this, imagine if this was one of your family members,
mm-hmm.
one of your sons, one of your daughters, one of your sisters, brother, whatever the case might be, and then say, but you know what? I don't care what happens to my son or daughter. I don't care what happens to my sister or brother. Let them go out there. If they're going to have this addiction, it might as well be at a place where it's, again, repeat, safe injection site where it's supervised. So I got to tell you, I've even come around on that, because in the beginning, I thought it was crazy.
I think you bring up a good point in that when you say if it was somebody's, you know, son or brother, if it was a relative of theirs, they might have a different reaction to it all. And I'm sure that there are people who are listening to this now that are like, well, yeah, but I'm not related to anybody that's a drug addict. But last night when we were talking to the Lewis County prosecutor, and he was talking about the number of people that he's been witness to that have had drug problems, it sounds like so many of them start off in a very kind of innocent, innocuous way, where there was a guy who said he had back pain and he gone on prescription for Oxycontin. And then after a while, it just became cheaper for him to find heroin.
Yep.
Than to find more Oxycontin.
Yep.
So I think for everybody that says that this is not applicable to me in that I'm not related to anybody that's dealing with this affliction, you say that now, and I'm not saying that they will, but I'm saying that this can happen kind of to anybody. And the number of people that have found themselves in the throes of addiction usually didn't get that way by just randomly walking into an alley and saying, I'll try heroin today.
One of the best things that could happen in the future will be when former NFL players, those that are athletes, those that we have maybe heard of on television across the NFL, when they come out and they tell their stories and their experiences on how some of them have got hooked on pain pills. Because let's be real. We play fantasy football and we're talking about our team and this player might be hurt. How do you think some of these players come back so fast?
Mm.
They come back so fast. They're having these surgeries. They're, hey, go ahead and take this. After a matter of time, some of these NFL players sometimes can develop a drug problem where they're addicted to some of these pain pills.
How many years away would you say we are from some of these stories starting to come out? Is it 10 years from now that we're going to start to get a little bit more perspective?
Five years, where there's going to be some tell-all books that's going to come out, because these are the things that's going to make someone else who doesn't have kids or someone who says, you know what, drug problems don't apply to me.
Mm.
Any of those stories, they get to see some of these former NFL players and say, oh, it happens like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
then, I have that guy's poster on my wall.
Absolutely. And like you talked about with the gentleman, and happens with young women, everyone. Because it starts to now, they've clamped down on doctors and prescribing medications.
Mm-hmm.
It is tougher now to get some of these Oxycontins and everything. So again, and if you do get the Oxycontin, you're paying a lot of money for it. So like you said,
mm-hmm.
it's cheaper to go and get the heroin. Mm-hmm. And then when you get on the heroin, and unfortunately, we have right now we have a problem where there's fentanyl that is out there, mm-hmm. and then they get a hold of that, it's disguised. Mm-hmm. They get that, they're in trouble because some of that stuff can kill you right away. So it's something that even with this safe injection sites, like anything, I think we just, you know, as we keep talking through it, it'll get better. And by the way, when they made marijuana legal, mm-hmm. I thought that was the dumbest thing in the world, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old school, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I grew up, like, say no to drugs. Mm-hmm. This is your brain, and this is your brain on drugs. Like, mm-hmm. I've been scared of drugs my entire life.
Fear worked for you.
Fear worked for me, mm-hmm. big time.
I think that that is, unfortunately, the problem is that I think a lot of people want to go back to sort of that fear-based model. And today, I think there's just too much access to other information where fear will no longer do it. I feel like fear worked because there was only a limited amount of resources that you had available to you mm-hmm. at the time. So anything that you heard from an authority figure, you just kind of believed because you weren't going to go suss it out on your
own. You know what my dad said to me a long time ago? He said, "Champ, sometimes people just tell you, oh, drugs are bad for you, and then they leave it alone. I'm here to tell you, sometimes you might take some of them drugs, and you know what? It might be really good for you. That's the problem, right? Mm. Like sometimes somebody might have a really good time, and that's where you get tricked into getting on it." So he would talk to me that way instead of the, oh, yeah, drugs are bad, end of story.
Mm.
Yep, I've always been scared of it. This came up. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this. David, have you ever heard of The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
I have, yeah. I watched that film when I was probably like 8 or 9 years old. It was mm-hmm. It's a cool movie. I like mm-hmm. it.
It was a movie that was actually adapted from a comic written by Alan Moore with the idea that, like, take a whole bunch of literary figures and put them in the same universe. So you would have, you know, what was that? Jekyll and Hyde, and then also Captain Nemo and everything. That is definitely the nicer version of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I wish that was the story that we were talking about,
mm-mm.
but that name has been purposed for another reason.
A man who created a website that gave Yelp-like reviews for prostitutes in Seattle and Bellevue is now facing 3.5 years in prison. A total of 33 men were arrested in connection to a prostitution bust involving a group called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So I thought David knew about this, but he was talking about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Radio's Hannah Scott was at the King County Courthouse for his sentencing today.
A total of 33 men were arrested in connection with the massive prostitution bust where Korean women were forced to live in luxury apartment buildings in Bellevue and Seattle and advertised online on a website where Johns could exchange Yelp-like reviews of the women's services. Charles Peters was recently convicted on a variety of charges for running the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen website. The 12 women who were being prostituted and promoted by Peters and others were rarely allowed to leave their apartments and advertised as available for work up to 14 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week.
Okay, let me I want to get through this topic really quick, and then I have another way I want to talk about this because it has been something that's been bothering me. And it actually kind of segued. We're talking about the safe injection sites for heroin. And give me a second.
Okay.
The one thing about this that is not cool, it's not cool that they are forcing women into working 14-hour days, forcing them to stay in these luxury apartments, telling them what they can do and not do. That ain't cool.
Mm.
I just want to be crystal clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Done with that topic. By the way, my man gets 3.5 years. Prostitution sting. It's illegal. Blah, blah, blah. Everybody go ahead. And the moral police says, oh, my goodness, that is so terrible. Good. Here's my question. If I would have said to you 30, 40 years ago, hey, man, I just got back from the future. And there's three things. Two of these three things are absolutely legal. One is still illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Shooting up heroin in public, smoking marijuana, or prostitution. If 30 years ago I would have said that to you, which ones would you think would be legal today?
That's a good question. I don't know that necessarily shooting up heroin in public is legal, but it's I think in particular in Seattle, it's starting to feel that way.
And
I'm surprised. I honestly
the safe injection, for the sake of the argument,
sure, of
the
course.
Safe injection site.
I honestly would have thought the prostitution would have made its way.
That's my point that I'm getting at. And so today at my desk, I was just trying to think, A, I don't know if I'm really necessarily questioning because, again, this is kind of my old school values. That mm-hmm. I'm like, duh, prostitution should not be. But especially in this story right here, when you start talking about people being forced against their will, I don't like that at all. That's mm-hmm. not cool. But will there come a time in the future? Because right now, they're already getting rid of misdemeanor arrests for prostitution. Mm-hmm. They're trying to throw those away. And they've been just talking about that recently. In the future, will there come a time that prostitution will be legal?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because I don't think there is any way to guarantee that you're removing the entire danger aspect that goes with that entire business.
The forcing that person to do that.
Forcing or just, I mean, I think in a picturesque world, you're kind of thinking about prostitution as, you know, each individual person who's participating in is kind of their own business type of person. They're kind of in control of all their clientele and everything. It's just kind of a self-contained operation. And I don't think that will ever happen. I think that as long as there are powerful men that will exert influence over women, that there will always be somebody who suffers along the way.
I'm not just saying this for the sake of argument. I do think in the future it will become legal.
Mm.
Because I truly believe that probably the number one reason why it is not legal today
mm-hmm.
probably has to do with still there's still that little bit of that just isn't right mm. type of. That's the only way they can explain it.
Mm.
You're just not supposed to do that, which I don't disagree.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
I don't disagree with that.
Right.
But again, if you would have asked me 30 years ago if marijuana would be legal, mm-hmm. I would have said there's no way in the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, though, when we look at the marijuana in this state, it is highly regulated. And I don't think that prostitution will ever get to that level of regulation where a local government will feel comfortable with it.
We could have kept going. I had some more points on that one. Coming up next, Mike Lewis in to talk about the poll that was done on whether or not folks like the Seattle City Council. We'll do that next. This is the Cowher Knights. I'm G. Scott. Welcome back into Cowher Knights. I am G. Scott. Happy Thursday, y'all. Hope you guys are having a great evening. This quote right here is what I took from all of it. The quote is, "This is the most unpopular city council in a decade. It will make for interesting spring when council elections really get underway." This came from a Seattle political consultant who asked to remain anonymous. This also comes from a report that was on My Northwest written by my good friend, Mike Lewis. He joins us me right now. Mike Lewis, thanks for joining me, man.
Always happy to. In fact, I look forward to it every time I get a chance to go on your show. It makes my day just a little bit better.
Appreciate it, man. All right, man. I read this. Took me about 4 to 5 minutes to read it, man. Tell us what happened, how this came to be. It was something. It was an opinion poll from last August. Take it from there.
So what happens is whenever there is a bit of legislation that the city feels vested in, or anyone feels vested in, I mean, it's always their option to do it, they'll do some secret polling to find out, all right, where are the liabilities, where are the assets of what we're trying to do? The Seattle was pushing the education levy. It was designed to fund preschool. It was designed to, it's one of those things that's generally pretty popular in a place like Seattle. But the folks pressing for this, and the city was behind it as well, they were worried that Seattle was getting tax fatigue. And so they contract with a company, EMC, that does a lot of research, political research here in Seattle, a lot of public opinion polls. And they said, hey, how is this thing looking, you know, a month out, 3 months out from the actual election in November? They did a poll. They talked to 400 voters. And what they found was that the education levy itself was pretty popular. That proved to be fairly accurate. The voters approved it by nearly 69%. But the poll also did something else, and this was the more interesting part to me. These polls also try to, they try to do two things, like how popular is your item, and then what is the political, what are the political winds surrounding your item? What is the weather system that your item is going to have to deal with on its way to the ballot? And that's where this poll, that's where I focused this story on. It turns out when they did questions about how do you feel about the city council, how do you feel about the direction of the city, all of these things that sort of bring, let you know what the backdrop is to your initiative, it turns out that, one, the city council is deeply unpopular in Seattle. There's strongly, one in five voters feel strongly opposed or strongly negative feelings about the city council, which is a 25% of the, or 20% of the voters right off the bat do not like anything about the city council. But there, but it's just generally unfavorable. That's more than 50. That's all, not quite 50%. And so what you have, and so the favorable is right around 46%. So what you're having is a voter sentiment that's pretty anti-city council. This comes after, this was done in August. 2 months prior, the city had had the head tax fiasco. Right. And that's what sort of set the ground for this. But what has also happened in the, since the head tax, is that the mayor has gotten relatively popular. The mayor is being, the mayor is being perceived as kind of the adult in the room, if you will. And this poll also showed that while the mayor's political fortunes seem to be on the rise, and that certainly the education levy did well, and people feel bad about the direction of the city. They really don't trust the government's ability to spend its money. But mainly, they really don't like the city council. And so what this has done is it's left the council not only unpopular, but seven of these seats are coming up next year for election. So you've got spring. This is the quote that you read. You're prescient because that's exactly sort of the sum total of the story. Spring is going to get interesting for a lot of people in town. Two seats are open because the people are not rerunning. That's Sally Bagshaw. That's Rob Johnson. But then there's another five where people are running and do want to retain their seats. And they're part of a very unpopular city council. But what this poll didn't say is who specifically. Right. And the, and it's sometimes it is that within your district, maybe you are popular, but you're not well liked outside your district. You, we could say maybe a Shama Sawant. We could say maybe a Bruce Harrell, along with a Teresa Mosqueda. They may be popular in the districts and not popular outside. So maybe they don't need to be well liked right. outside. But the suspicion is that every council member come the next election is at least a little vulnerable, if not very vulnerable.
We're joined here by Mike Lewis, our Cairo news reporter here on Cairo Nights. And you brought up Shama Sawant. And, you know, I sit back and I listen to you a lot of times in the newsroom. And I, you know, kind of, you're in the know. And one of the things that stands out to me with Sawant is, I don't like Sawant. I'm going to give it right to you. There's a lot of people I know that don't like Sawant. But what I'm learning is this. I don't think it matters. Because there's so many in her district, she might be the only one, and I'm taking this from you, that can say, hey, we're doing something, and 500 people are there in 5 minutes.
Well, you and I have talked about this. I mean, she comes from a form of political populism, activist voters, that is, you don't see a lot of in Seattle. I mean, anyone who spent any time paying attention to New York politics, and I use Al Sharpton as my favorite example, someone who can get 500 people to show up at a city street at midnight on 20 minutes notice is a powerful politician. She can pack the council room anytime she pleases with a bunch of people who believe in her. Now, do these people actually live in her district is going to be another question because they're the ones who are going to keep her in office. But she became a she's a party of one and became the most influential member on the city council. She is not afraid of a fight. She's a I think a better politician than people realize because she's not afraid to be unpopular. And sometimes that's your ticket to real power.
You know, I'll admit something. And the reason why I brought up Sawant is I have of all the council members, she's the one that I have a the strongest opinion of. But then I've been really kind of paying attention lately to what's been going on. And it's almost like I almost sometimes feel better knowing what I'm getting. Out of a politician. It's the ones that lean on the fence and try to act one way, but then actually are another. Lincoln Beauregard. We know who that is, the lawyer.
That always elicits a chuckle. Lincoln Beauregard.
Right, Lincoln Beauregard. He kind of mentioned a little bit, Mike, that he won't, you know, if there's no worthy candidates, he might run. What's Lincoln doing, man? Is he just going to be a thorn in the council side, or what's he doing?
I think he is more of a professional thorn than a professional politician. I think he'd also realize he'd probably take a pay cut. So my guess is Lincoln is not going to run, but it would be, as a reporter, I cannot imagine a better world than if Lincoln decides to run for city council, because that just is, that is the type of race you want to cover. I'm not even sure, candidly, what district he lives in.
Yeah, neither
but,
do I.
But he is the type of person, polarizing, interesting, way more effective than people give him credit for. And I think he'd be a fun guy to have out there. And he certainly would raise issues that that would make other people very uncomfortable. I think that that would be great. I don't know if he's going to, but I can promise you this. I'm working on some stories right now. You're going to see people who if you've been in Seattle a while, you have heard of before, who are going to be running. There is a whole group of people talking to other people, talking to political consultants, talking to the people with the money, and who are thinking about running for city council, because there is this broad perception that the business community is unhappy, the citizenry is unhappy, a lot of council members are vulnerable, and this is really the most liberal council in a liberal city that the city has seen in a long, long time. The thinking is that everyone is in play, and every seat has a possibility, with the exception of the two that are just not up for re-election, the two at-large seats, but every district one is in play.
Of the, how many of the council members that are up in play? Is it five of them?
It's seven of
seven,
the nine.
Seven of the nine.
Yes.
Seven of the nine. And I know you don't like to gamble or shoot any ballpark predictions. Of the seven, how many do you think get reelected?
Well, so it'd really be of the five, because two are not. Right?
Okay. Yeah, so you were
correct.
Okay,
I guess if that's your question,
yeah, that's my question.
Of the five, of the how five. Many of those yes. are going to lose? This is a good question. Probably the strongest one, I'm told, might be Lisa Herbold in West Seattle. She regularly, but there's a lot of business people there who feel like she's not paid attention to their needs. But my guess is that name recognition, she circulates a lot. West Seattle functions like it's almost a suburb of Seattle anyway. It's almost its own town.
I think Bruce is good.
I think Bruce is probably a little more vulnerable than her. So then where do you go? You go down the list. I think after that, you start getting into people who are vulnerable. And the Sawant question is an interesting one, because this election, I think, is going to be much more of a style when so when they first switched to district elections, everybody still sort of ran on this broad platform of being the best person for Seattle. But now that it's matured a little bit, this is really going to be the first election, I think, that's going to represent district door-to-door politics. It's going to be less expensive races for people, which is good, and they're only going to really be pushing in their district because that's all they have to win. And so you politic a little bit differently. These things that you may think are good for Seattle may in fact not be good for your district. I'm talking about growth and density and things like that. The style of politicking we're going to see is going to be much, much more neighborhood-based and less Seattle needs to be a leader in these things. Gotcha. It's going to be much more about, you know, the central district needs to not have these things or Ballard, have more of these West things Seattle. Or battle yep. or what Seattle. Yep. And so I think we're going to find a very different style of politicking this time around. And I think that if there's enough money behind a candidate, I think almost any one of these seats could be a winner for somebody with the proper resources.
That's Mike Lewis. You can follow Mike Lewis on Twitter at MikeLew65. Thanks so much for joining us, man. You listen to Kyro Nights. I am G. Scott. Welcome back in to Kyro Nights. I am G. Scott. Drew, it's time for...
Popular. You're really unpopular.
All right, your unpopular opinion for this evening is that a white elephant party is more fun than an ugly sweater party.
Oh my goodness, yes, Lord.
Yeah. Yes, Lord.
Yes, yes. Nobody's looking and nobody's listening. It's just us right here and mm-hmm. our Kyro Nights listeners.
You want to use the private microphone?
I think ugly sweater parties, I think they're dumb. Mm-hmm. I think they're really dumb.
Didn't we have one today here in the company?
You know what? It took me until I saw Marin. I don't want to say.
The HR person.
The HR person. And I finally put two and two together like, oh. Everybody's doing ugly sweaters today.
You just figured that I had advised all of them on their attire for the day, right? She blamed me, I know.
Yeah, look at you.
That's a classy sweater, though, Frank.
I like that sweater, Frank.
Well, you've told me that before.
Yeah, I actually like that sweater. But no, I think I absolutely love White Elephant Party.
Oh, really? That's so much fun.
That is so much fun. Oh, my goodness. I haven't...
I haven't been to one in a minute either.
And have you? When's it? And isn't it fun if you get a white elephant gift that you like really like and then try to hold on to?
Yeah,
that's the best.
It's just like you don't. You go in there with low expectations,
right?
Don't go in there. If you're a jerk if you go in there with some high expectations, expecting to come out. Don't do that. I love white elephant parties. I think the whole ugly sweater party. I'm so done with that.
Well, and I was the other option that I had for an unpopular opinion was that if you're buying an ugly sweater just to wear it to an ugly sweater party, and it's like a new sweater that was purposefully made ugly.
Don't do it.
That just kind of defeats the purpose.
Defeats purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get an ugly sweater, it should be vintage, right?
I mean, look, we all know here at Cairo that Frank Shires would win every time.
I actually have a lovely Norwegian red, white, and blue sweater that has white reindeer running across the shoulders, and it's very Yashor, yes, you betcha. Ooh. And my parents brought it back with love in their hearts from a vacation to Norway back in the 1970s, and I never let it go.
Oh, that
it is in my closet.
Oh, good. Hey, so I am not wearing it. No, next week you're going to wear it. Next week, and we're going to take a picture.
I still have it.
Could be good.
I got about 9 or 10 items of my dad's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you?
That's in my closet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got a couple of sweaters. All I do is sniff it.
That's right. You want to smell him.
Yep.
I totally get that.
David wears a lot of sweaters. Do you own an ugly sweater, David?
No, I don't really do the whole ugly thing. That's not part of my thing.
Talk to your brother.
Let me tell you something. I really do rocks with you, man. I really rocks with you, David. That whole ugly sweater thing, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
My goodness. Coming up next, you guys are in for a treat. Sarah Colonna. That's right. She's going to be our guest coming up next. You guys are listening to Cairo Nights. I am G. Scott.